The Wake Up Call with Richard Martin, Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. Please be advised that the opinions and views expressed by Richard Martin of GF Investment Services, LLC, are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent the views of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments based off of Richard Martin's comments are unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener and the investor.
Mr. Co-President Nigel Farage.
Mr. Juncker, as President of the Eurogroup, your detachment from reality is almost unbelievable. I mean, you're behaving like a political ostrich, pretending none of it's happening. You just told us a few moments ago that Greece fundamentally has no problems because she's a member of the Eurozone. I mean, it's just deluded. And you wrote recently that the Euro's 13-year history is a success story. Well, it's a very odd kind of success, isn't it? And actually, saying that, frankly, beggars belief, and I think hardly makes you credible. I think it's about time that you and others in this room woke up to the fact that we are inflicting misery on millions of people through unemployment, through poverty, through a loss of democracy, and that it's an error to try and keep countries trapped inside the Euro prison. The recent proposal is that Greece should write down her debts by 50% and remain a member of the Eurozone. Surely, Mr. Juncker, if that happens, the same would happen to Portugal and Ireland too. Do you think it's possible for any member state of the Euro to write down their debts and stay a member of the Euro?
Mr. President, I didn't say that Greece has no problems. I didn't say that. I did say that although Greece is a member of the euro area, Greece is in deep problems. So don't take it the way around that you can put the question you anyway had the intention to put. The second point, I don't think that it would be wise and useful for the president of the euro area to take part in all kind of speculations of the nature of those you were mentioning in the third part of your question. Your second question was linked to my credibility, as far as I understood. I prefer mine to yours.
Very good, Mr. Juncker. Very good. Interesting. Well, on this very point of credibility, you yourself said back in April that when things become serious, you have to lie. That is what you said back in April, and it seems to me that things are pretty serious and that, frankly, everything you say is a lie. The euro cannot and should not be held together under its current construction, and it's about time you admitted, you and all of you in this room, you've got this wrong, and countries like Greece need to be set free.
Monsieur, sehr verehrter Herr Präsident, weil
President, you've just quoted a newspaper which wasn't actually British, it was a German newspaper, saying that when things get tough, we have to lie. Perhaps I should actually quote what I said in the language of the newspaper which you've referred to. The quotation was correct to some extent, but taken out of context. In Brussels, I was speaking to the pan-European movement. These are people who believe in Europe. We have to speak to them sometimes as well. In previous years, back in the days when I was just a European finance minister, every few months there was talk about valuing or devaluing currencies in the European currency system. So back then, we often used to emit on Sundays, for example, or just before the markets closed, and at such times it was very difficult for us to tell the truth. However, the mistake I made was that by trying to honest, I actually used a form of words which paved the way to your supplementary question.
Dziękuję.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. And he, and by the way, he did say that. He said that when things got serious, you had to lie. He said those words. So the absurd way in which this adult man, human being, tried to sort of eel his way, squirm his way out of pretending that he didn't say what he really did say is contemptible in the extreme. I just wish there were a few people in the American Congress who stood up to these people. You know, and I'm thinking in particular of Rod and Paul. I mean, why couldn't Ron Paul speak in those kind of terms? You know, he feels the same way, but he just won't step up to the plate and say it as it is. And that's what ruins his credibility. And it's a shame that a man who's over 70 years old doesn't have enough confidence in himself, frankly, to say the things that need to be said. What does he have to lose? I mean, obviously, if he doesn't become a presidential candidate after the primaries on this round, he's finished. I mean, he was not going to try again. So he's got absolutely nothing to lose by pulling these people, you know, out of their stupor and really calling them to the mat and to account, you know, for all their lies and prevarications and fraudulent behavior. It's a pity. That's all I can say. It's a great shame. Anyway, as I'm sure you had deduced, that was Nigel Farage in the European Parliament, talking to all the other, you know, senile idiots just basically sitting there. If you could have seen the video, you'd have seen them smirk it's a pathetic story altogether. This euro thing is going to fail. It's going to be a gigantic financial Armageddon, and quite frankly, we'll talk about it after it happens. Because there is blame, and I don't want to really go through the blame game at this point, but rest assured, ladies and gentlemen, I will. All I will say at this point is that failure and mass default and bankruptcy is a certainty, and the question is not whether, it is when. Right, well, while we're on the subject of lies and prevarications, I thought I would bring to you the latest lie from the Bureau of Statistics in the United States concerning the retail sales figure, which came out last week, another statistical lie that received great fanfare, described as being apparently up 0.3% for the previous month. The U.S. Census Bureau announced that advance estimates of the U.S. retail and food services sales for September, adjusted for seasonal variation and holiday and trading differences, but not for price changes, were $395.5 billion, an increase of 1.5% from the previous month, and 7.9% above September 2010. Well, total sales for July through September 2011 period were up 8% from the same period a year ago, and the July to August 2011 percentage change was revised from virtually unchanged to up 0.3%. And remember that price changes, in other words, inflation, is not in the numbers, so it makes them, of course, look better, in fact. But the seasonal factors are. So now let's play the game of spot the increase, shall we? We have a number of headings to choose from. We've got electronics, health, gasoline, clothing, sporting goods, general merchandise, the internet, and bars. All right, well, the figure was up for the month, so let's see in which categories we had an increase. Let's start with health. And the increase in health? Nope, no increase. Let's try gasoline. Oh, yes, gasoline. No, no increase. Clothing? Certainly, kids needed new clothes going back to school. That's where the increase was, right? Oh, no. That was down, too. How about sporting goods? Collapsed. Down some 18% month on month. General merchandise. Ah, there we go. Nope. Sorry. It was down about 7%. Ah, well, the internet saved us, right? Actually, the internet, or non-store retailers, were down slightly too. Well, we've got one place that must have been up. Bars. I mean, with the economy sucking this badly, we all went out and got drunk. Put it on our credit cards, right? Actually, we didn't. September saw a minus 2.5% decline there, too. So, the truth? The truth is that the entire gain was as a result of the seasonal adjustment. All of it. In other words, in actual dollars, there was not only no increase at all, there was a net decrease in sales of approximately 5%. And that's not annualized either. That's month over month. Well, I always say that I will bring you the information as and when I can, ladies and gentlemen, and I will not shirk from that responsibility. The absolute usual nonsense that we have to put up with from these government organs that are trying to goose the figures so that you will go out and buy merrily and with gay abandon, thinking that everybody else is doing so too, so you'd just be a wimp if you didn't. And that's what I'm afraid it's all about. Well, last night I sent to my email distribution group what I consider to be the definitive report on the European situation by Ambrose Evans-Pritchard of Britain's Telegraph. Evans-Pritchard is by far, in my opinion, the most lucid of reporters on the European situation, and I've been waiting for months for him to issue such a report. Basically, it confirms the inevitability of an absolute imminent financial implosion for the continent of Europe. Where the jobless rate for youth is near 10% in Japan, it is already 46% in Spain, 43% in Greece, 32% in Ireland, and 27% in Italy. As Evans-Pritchard says, we will discover over time what yet more debt deleveraging will do to these societies. And quoting further, how Europe allowed this to happen will no doubt be the subject of many inquiries. Suffice it to say that it was an intellectual failure by everybody, lenders, economists, regulators, and the European Central Bank. The ECB misread the implications of the global capital surplus in the middle of the last decade, like the Fed, and gunned the M3 money supply at double-digit rates, like the Fed. This great error further juiced the fatal flooding of lending from North Europe to Club Med. Interestingly, it is what U.S. lending did to Germany in the late 1920s. When the music stopped, when Wall Street cut off loans, as Germany has now cut off loans to Spain, trouble ensued within 2 years. As Europe cuts its loan-to-deposit ratio to Japan's level, quoting Evans-Pritchard, it will be an ice-cold douche for the world. European banks have $3.4 trillion of cross-border loans to emerging markets, and that's BIS data, 3/4 of the total. They account for 46% in Asia, 63% in Latin America, and 90% in Eastern Europe. The IMF pitches fresh capital needs at 200 billion euros, but what if Credit Suisse is nearer the mark at 400 billion euros? Such sums would push the public debt of several states over the danger line, intensifying the vicious circle as banks and sovereigns drag each other down. Quoting him again, indeed, if you look at each of the components of the grand plan, everyone creates a secondary chain of consequences that may ultimately prove self-defeating. It is why I fear there may be no plausible solution to Europe's crisis. The structural damage has already gone too far. Well, he goes on to discuss the suicidal nature of the ramping up of the EFSF bailout fund with leverage. That and all the other insane so-called solutions will be opposed by German ideology and what he calls the granite of the Bundesbank. You see, it all comes down to currency misalignment. Europe's fate was sealed the day it agreed to a uniform currency for all the disparate cultures and economies. It couldn't succeed, and I said so at the time, way before PRN was created, and I started the wake-up call. Very, very tragic indeed, ladies and gentlemen, and do not lose sight for one tiny second of the fact that this whole thing is going to be Armageddon of the most monumental and grotesque proportions. The entire world is going to be brought to its knees because of this. And as I say, I'm not going to discuss the whys and wherefores right now. There's plenty of time to do that after the event. But just know that when you are short in the stock market and you start to panic, because these markets are as foolish, frankly, as the politicians behind them, just know that when these markets go up, they will come crashing back down as fast or faster than they went up. So there you have it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let me at this point give you my information. This is Monday, the 17th of October. This is the wake-up call coming to you from Singapore. And in Singapore, I am able to receive calls toll-free from the United States, anywhere in the United States, through the magic of a toll-free number as follows. 888-874-4888. That is your sign, ladies and gentlemen, that you have an in to my show, to call in, to make your point, to ask a question, to air a rant, to discuss anything you wish to discuss, including the Occupy Wall Street demonstrations. As I said, I'm not really going to talk much about them, but I will entertain your questions and be perfectly happy for you to discuss this on the show yourselves if you so wish. So it is your show. You talk about what you want to talk about. I will merely moderate and add whatever value I can. And again, the toll-free number is 888-874-4888. Okay, right, and then if you want to email me, you can, because I have an email address, and it's always open, and it is as follows, rm@gfawd.com, rm, Richard Martin, GFAWD, Global Financial Advisory Wealth Design.com. Once again, the email, rm@gfawd.com. And my personal number, my direct line for those of you who want to talk about your individual situations, and I'm most gratified to see that people are still doing this, and I will give you all the time you need. I mean, I had somebody on the phone for 90 minutes yesterday, and not a problem. I'm very happy to talk to you about your problems and troubles, and so if you wish to talk to me, then please pick up the phone and call. An area code in Sarasota, which is 941-441-1682. Again, my number through Sarasota, Florida, coming straight through to Singapore, is 941-441-1682. And please, as I always say, call anytime. Don't worry about the time. If I'm not available, just leave your name and a phone number, and I will call you back. Okay? Once more, the number is 941-441-1682. Okay. Well, a little bit of housekeeping here. In 2 weeks, there will be the third meeting of the Richard Martin Meetup Group in New Brunswick, New Jersey, moderated by Lou, who will be happy for you to come. It just merely needs you to call him and get and inform him that you do indeed wish to attend, so that he can put together the correct number of seats at the tables at Evelyn's Restaurant. I understand that I have mispronounced this for my sins. I have called it Evelyn's Restaurant, but apparently it is Evelyn's Restaurant, like forever, according to Lou, who helpfully provided me with some phonetics so that I should pronounce this correctly. Again, it's Evelyn's Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, at 52 Eastern Avenue, and I should point out that Eastern is spelled E-A-S-T-O-N. Avenue, for those of you who want to put that into your GPS in New Brunswick. And attendees of the next meeting, I just got a message from Lou, attendees of the next meeting will receive a free CD interview with expat expert Johnny Mueller called Latin American Solutions. And I have given out details about Johnny's show on PRN called The Expat Files. I don't know if anybody who's listened to it, the program, but I believe it is jam-packed full of useful information. Johnny has lived in Latin America for many years, and he has graciously, he lives in El Salvador, so he was unable to be present at the meeting in 2 weeks' time, but there will be some information for you all, and Lou is going to put together an interesting afternoon for you. So 2 p.m. on the 30th of October, and I strongly recommend that as many of you as possible try to attend. It should be interesting. Okay. Right. Well, I got an email from Carlos Gutierrez as follows. Whatever did happen to Occupy 2011 at Freedom Plaza in D.C.? Mr. Martin, with all due respect to your recent decision of leaving aside the ongoing Occupy Wall Street phenomenon or group, heightened level of media attention, would you consider opening a parenthetical space in your show's packed lineup of other topics, perhaps in support of your own wise choice to lessen the focus on this social action, to take into account how this natural outburst of activism may, among other things, have resulted in a twisted hypothetical scenario that muddies up the whole Occupy phenomenon story and idea or objective? Would it be fair to say that the media madness generated around the mass movement led by Occupy Wall Street folks may have served the establishment as a red herring, diverting attention from events as newsworthy, at least like the 10-year anniversary of the U.S. occupation of Afghanistan, a real boondoggle and the drainage of much-needed public funds? An event called Occupy Freedom Plaza in D.C., scheduled for Friday, October the 7th, had been planned for months in advance. Needless to say, the D.C. action saw itself affected, with lower attendance, by the hastily put together Wall Street and L.A. occupations. Even the term Occupy suits a peace rally like Occupy Freedom Plaza in D.C. much better for obvious reasons. In other words, Occupy Wall Street does not make as solid a linguistic use of the aforementioned term. Perhaps a hint of which concept came first chronologically. Please, ask yourself the following question. Have I heard anything about the 10-year occupation of Afghanistan lately? Brilliantly evil, right? Well-intended folks may be lending a hand to a rotten enterprise, making the general public feel there is a resistance to the corporate moguls, standing around with signs, boxing food for the participants, providing speeches for those in attendance, etc. The facts presented, as well as history itself, sure point in that direction. Thank you, Richard Carlos Gutierrez. Well, Carlos, my own interest in any kind of activity is one which you, as my faithful listeners, can put to good use. Of course, if any of the listeners wish to sit out and occupy the various different venues where people have camped out in all over the country, you are very welcome to do so, and you will receive my full entire support. But again, Carlos, my feeling is that what I can do best here on the wake-up call is to bring attention to the things that are really happening in the big wide world. It's very important for you to know that when you're told that the retail sales are up a certain amount for a particular month, that it is a lie, and to know why it's a lie, and you know, to be able even to bring this to the attention of people in the groups which you might attend, which may not be confined to Occupy Wall Street. There may be other groups which require your attention and to which you can bring valuable information to bear to alert people to the fraudulent nature of the information that you receive from the public mouth. So that's kind of where I come from, Carlos. Obviously, I want to emphasize that I am very happy to receive calls from people who want to talk about this. This is something that people feel inclined to discuss. Do not hesitate. Pick up the phone, and you will be received with open arms by me here half around the world in Singapore. But that's really where I think I'm going to leave that one right now. And again, thank you very much for your email, Carlos. Well, the five busiest container ports in the United States said that imports in August 2011 were lower than or even with 2010 volumes. In Long Beach, in the second busiest container port by volume, August imports fell by 14.2% from August 2010. The weekly leading index, WLI, Growth Indicator of the Economic Cycle Research Institute, which is the ECRI, has posted 10 consecutive declines since early August. The interim high of 8.0 was set in the week ending on April the 15th. The latest reading data through October 7th is minus 9.6, down from the previous week's minus 8.7. On September the 30th, the ECRI publicly announced that the U.S. is tipping into a recession, a call the Institute had announced to its private clients on September the 21st. Early last week, ECRI notified clients that the U.S. economy is indeed tipping into a new recession, and that there is nothing that policymakers can do to head it off. The Ceridian UCLA Pulse of Commerce Index, or the PCI, a real-time measure of the flow of goods to U.S. factories, retailers, and consumers, fell 1.0% in September, on a seasonally and workday-adjusted basis, following a 1.4% decline in August and a 0.2% decline in July. The Ceridian UCLA Pulse of Commerce Index issued Wednesday by the UCLA Anderson School of Management and Ceridian Corp is based on real-time diesel fuel consumption data for over-the-road trucking and serves as an indicator of the state and possible future direction of the U.S. economy. By tracking the volume and location of fuel being purchased, the index closely monitors the over-the-road movement of raw materials, goods in process, and finished goods to United States factories, retailers, and consumers. With hopes that September data would be positive last month, based on the July and August data, the idea was that the PCI would likely decline in the third quarter, suggesting GDP growth of 0 to 1.0%. Well, Ed Leamer, chief economist for the Ceridian UCLA Pulse of Commerce Index and director of the UCLA Anderson Forecast, said, "With the continued weakness in September, the PCI-based forecast for third quarter GDP growth is zero." Well, ladies and gentlemen, you may have found that a turgid group of statistics, but I assure you that the transportation of goods across the country is absolutely indicative of what's going on in the country. And if that is negative, you can take it home that we are in or coming into a recession, especially if that figure has been negative for 3 months. So that's where we have it, and that's where we will stop right now for our break, and I will be right back. Okay, well, we are back, and let me just put these Occupy Wall Street protests into some sort of context here. If you consider the Occupy Wall Street protests and the rise of the Tea Party as synonymous with discontent in the country, they have both already changed America. But I have to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, you've seen nothing. And you know, you'd better buckle up, because America is getting very angry. I mean, these are the reports that are coming through loud and clear. Occupy Wall Street or no Occupy Wall Street, the economy continues to decline, and the economic protests can only become much more frightening in the years ahead. You know, Americans have become very accustomed to prosperity, and now that that prosperity is vanishing, people are becoming very angry. The vast majority of the population now lives in highly congested urban areas, which makes the potential for mass rioting and civil unrest much greater. You know, back in 1910, 72% of Americans lived in rural areas, and today only 16% live in rural areas. So what happens when you have millions of incredibly angry people crammed into tightly congested metropolitan areas? Well, we're about to find out. Over the past 4 years, we have seen some unprecedented things happen in America. First, we witnessed the rise of the Tea Party movement. Initially, it pretty much was a grassroots movement, but of course now it's mostly been taken over by establishment Republicans. And so now we're witnessing the rise of Occupy Wall Street. And, you know, there are some grassroots elements to it, but the reality is that Occupy Wall Street seems to be pretty much in the hands of people who've got an agenda or otherwise, although the entire movement appears still in the gestating situation of asking questions rather than making demands. It is, however, a fact, I think, that there are as many opinions and desires and motivations among these demonstrators as there are demonstrators in the groups and groups in the country. One individual was apparently told that Ron Paul signs were not welcome at a recent protest. So, you know, you really have people from all walks of life in the 99%, almost like fighting each other for predominance. But all is for the good. The whole concept of a movement like this becomes much more effective the more leeway it has in its beginning stages. It goes without saying that the Tea Party movement and the Occupy Wall Street movement really do pretty much stand on opposite ends of the spectrum, but those that control the political parties are enjoying the view. Now, the people expressing their anger through the protest movements, such as Occupy Wall Street, are not going to be content with the status quo for long. There's a lot of anger today, and the anger is rapidly growing. I mean, that is quite clear from the entire country, that if these groups are gathering strength and momentum, it is because of anger. It's not just a question of what kind of policies do we want, it is a question of the growth of anger. And if they're clever, these people who run them, especially the police, will simply let these people have their say. Unfortunately, there's still a lot of violence. A lot of police forces are running over the line here and causing trouble. Millions of Americans are deeply upset about the economy and the financial system. And right now, you know, these protests have mostly been fairly peaceful. But, you know, I do fear that that will not last. I fear that as things progress, things get worse, tempers will fray, patience will run out. And you know, there are already signs that the Occupy protesters are not sort of sitting in the park and banging on drums. Protesters stormed the Seventh Heart office building in D.C. the other day. A handful of protesters were arrested, and more than 50 protesters from the Boston movement were arrested last week when they wouldn't do what the police were ordering them to do. Obviously, we had a march on the homes of the millionaires in New York, which was, I think, mostly fairly peaceful. That was protesters marching to the homes of Jamie Dimon, David Koch, John Paulson, Howard Milstein, Rupert Murdoch. That, of course, is going to upset people, and that's probably designed to do so. But the home protesters were organized, you know, to leave downtown Manhattan and move uptown. They were organized, and organizers such as SEIU board member Stephen Lerner has been talking about them for quite some time. Rightly, the Occupy group is focusing on the role of money in politics. The big financial power spent hundreds of millions of dollars on political campaigns, which buys a lot of influence over the political process. And frankly, if it didn't, the big financial powers wouldn't be spending that kind of money. But the big financial powers are not just spending money on political campaigns. It's now come out that the big Wall Street banks can order New York City police officers just like they would order pizzas. In fact, over $1 million is going to be spent this way just this year alone. Apparently, according to a recent article posted on counterpunch.org, detailing how it works, and I quote, "One of the ingenious methods that has remained below the public's radar was started by the Rudy Giuliani administration in New York City in 1998. It's called the Paid Dental Unit, and it allows the New York Stock Exchange and Wall Street corporations, including those repeatedly charged with crimes, to order up a flank of New York's finest with the ease of dialing the deli for a pastrami on rye. The corporations pay an average of $37 an hour, no medical, no pension benefit, no overtime pay. For a member of the NYPD with gun, handcuffs, and the ability to arrest, the officer is indemnified by the taxpayer, not the corporation. New York City gets a 10% administrative fee on top of the $37 an hour paid to the police. The city's 2011 budget called for $1,184,000 in paid detail fees, meaning private corporations were paying wages of $11.8 million to police participating in the paid detail unit. The program has more than doubled in revenue to the city since 2002. Well, expect the big Wall Street banks to be sending in orders for huge numbers of New York City cops to protect them from the half-crazed Occupy Wall Street protesters. If recent poll numbers are any indication, the anger of the American people is not going to abate anytime soon. According to Gallup, the percentage of Americans that lack confidence in U.S. banks is now at an all-time high of 36%. And according to a recent Washington Post ABC News poll, 90% of Americans believe that the economy is performing poorly, and approximately 80% believe that it is, quote, difficult to find a job right now. According to a recent Rasmussen survey, 48% of all people believe that reductions in government spending are, quote, at least somewhat likely to result in civil unrest inside the U.S. Another recent survey found that 73% of all Americans believe that the nation is, quote, on the wrong track. So you see, you've got a lot of people who are prime fodder for entering these protest groups. I understand that recently the idea was, as it gets colder, to bring them down from Boston to New York, and as it gets colder still, to bring them down to Atlanta, and then when it gets really cold, to take them to Florida and California. So there are provisions being made, apparently, for keeping these people around when it gets cold. According to a recent CBS News New York Times poll, Congress has a disapproval rating of 82%. A recent Rasmussen survey found that 85% of people believe that members of Congress, quote, are more interested in helping their own careers than in helping other people. And that same survey found that 46% of American people believe that most members of Congress are corrupt. Only 46? I wonder what the others think. That's more interesting to me. According to a different Rasmussen survey, only 17% of all Americans now believe the U.S. government has the consent of the governed. A recent Washington Post poll found that 78% of Americans are dissatisfied, quote, with the way this country's political system is working, unquote. And that only 26% of Americans now believe that the federal government can solve the economic problems that the country is facing. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this all adds up to a U.S. population that is very, very frustrated and looking for outlets for that frustration. As the U.S. economy continues to fall apart, that frustration is going to continue to rise. What we are seeing across the entire country is only the beginning. We are going to see protest movements and explosions of anger that we can't even imagine right now. Dark days are coming from America. As I said, you'd better buckle up. All right, well, let me read you another email that I got, actually, from Patrick Winchester. It's quite long, but I thought it would be interesting to bring to you. And he says as follows, "Hey there, Richard. Well, that other Pat certainly made some interesting comments. It's funny, I know you access more than mainstream corporate media because I send you links to alternative stuff myself. That person must have forgotten about the internet or something. I mean, obviously you use a wide variety of sources. That Alec Jones does a three-hour radio show every day plus a one-hour evening news show via his subscription site. That's 4 hours a day of research. And he barely has time to cover all the news in detail. And even then he doesn't have enough time. You could do a 10-hour show to cover some of these complex financial topics if everyone is to understand all the socio-political ramifications of them. How is one to expect that in 2 hours a week you would be able to cover these things in any more depth than you already do? You do a wonderful job. I know I've bitched about hearing that I should leave the country, but of course it's a hard argument to maintain. I don't exactly disagree with you. It might be better somewhere else. I don't know firsthand. My only intent is to make the point that it seems from my perspective that there is no place to run. Leaving America for some place worse does not sound good. What countries are not controlled by international bankers? What countries have independent, freely elected governments? What countries are not controlled by psychopathic dictators? And what countries are not at war with countries that are controlled by the international banks? Look at what NATO just did to Libya. They were independent. They won't be for long. Where else could you own firearms or self-defense items? You could live in some oil cocaine paradise in South America run by death squad narco-terrorist police. That sounds great. I am a Spaniard, fluent in Spanish. I could go to any Latin country with ease. However, the thought of living in South America turns my blood cold. Or you could go to Greece, like your other listener suggested. The people may be nice, but good luck with that Eurozone debacle. So that's all I'm saying. We have to fight this somewhere, no matter where on the planet we are. Switzerland might be nice. You can own guns there, and they're not in the Euro. But what right do Americans have to take their money somewhere and buy property that should belong to natives, or buy it out from under the poor people of some South American country? I know I could go to Costa Rica and live like a king, but what right do I have to go and take from the people already there just because my money is worth more than their money? Hell, is the United States even going to keep letting people out for very much longer? And besides, what about GMO food that is chosen to sterilize rodents in three generations? People are eating that crap all over the world. What about toxic big agro-farming practices that destroy thriving local food markets and contaminate 10,000-year-old corn varieties? Do they put fluoride in your water, use BPA plastic bottles that affect your hormones, give vaccinations that cause cancer and sterility? It is a fight that the entire world is waging at this point to not be completely enslaved by the Red Shield money changers and the technocratic dictators that they fund, carrying out their eugenics programs. Rockefeller funded the eugenics movement in this country, and IBM built the machines to process the Jews for Hitler. I hate to think that we're really powerless, as Dr. Roberts described, but certainly I was well aware of the points made in his article, as I said. It's hard to argue the counterpoint. It's fight or flight, right? Sometimes it's better to run, and sometimes you are forced into confrontation. I hope we can come through this peacefully. But I will tell you, I will not march into a ditch for a soldier to shoot me in the back. I will not go to the re-education camp or the FEMA camp. I will not be on the cattle car headed for the gas chamber. But, you know, you might be right. Going off into the middle of the forest somewhere in the Amazon and disappearing might be a better plan. I've often thought of doing that here in America. Just get a horse and some gear and hit the trail with my family, see how long we last. They can't stop me from doing that. But really, I just want to run my little farm in peace and support my family. On other news, I wanted to report from the Occupy Los Angeles protest. It was a diverse group, mostly dirty hippies, who had no idea what they were talking about. I am identified as a hippie also, so I'm not talking bad about these folks. I feel right at home with them, but I'm just saying that they're an apathetic, ineffectual, and ignorant group. There were some who understood, and I spent some time with them. I did a little megaphone monologue about the Federal Reserve and fractional reserve banking. I can't say what effect it had, but it got a little attention. I talked to an old man who identified himself as a Marxist, and I actually got him to understand that so long as the government is borrowing money, none of their utopian goals will ever be reached. Talking to him, I also really understood how totalitarian police state actions grow from this so-called leftist humanitarian view. He was saying we needed guaranteed union jobs, universal health care, etc. But really, what if I don't want the job the government has for me, or I don't want to pay the union dues? The Marxist will bring the police and throw you in a re-educational work camp at that point, or just kill you. Which brings me to the next point. What if they don't have a job for you? They just kill you. What if you aren't getting adequate health care? It's not your right to complain, because it's all taxpayer funded. You get what they want you to get, and die when they want you to die. Like Bill Gates says, if you don't supply the last 3 months of end-life care, you could hire 10 teachers. What a crazy Malthusian creep he is. But that's Marxism for you. Big mega corporations and banks run society and tell you what you get to have. And when you get to have it, and if you don't like it, goodbye to you. This is a good segue into your comment regarding being slaves. We really already are. Look at the property tax and income tax. You can't ever actually own property. You've got to have enough money for your entire life's worth of property tax, or they'll come throw you out on the street when you're 90 years old and put you in some welfare facility where you can die off and not cost money. We are in a terrible situation. The destruction of the family unit continues. The destruction of our economy continues. But really, the people out at the protest are asking to be slaves. Please tax us more and give us something, is basically the cry. They'll get the taxes, but not the handout. A real free market would energize this country. We built this country without an income tax, or sales tax, or property tax, without a drug war, interventionist foreign policy. And we have fought the central bank throughout our history. We have defeated it before, and we can do it again. I don't care how fluoride-addled, brain-damaged, and television zombie-filled the population is. There is a minority that is rapidly awakening, and it only takes that 1% if they are vocal. Thanks again, Patrick. Well, Patrick, I'm honored that you should have taken the time to write that email to us. It is filled with a lot of good sense and a lot of very interesting and thoughtful concepts for us to study. And I'm very, very grateful to you for having done that, and very proud that you should have chosen, you know, the wake-up call to put all this down, hopefully coming to many hundreds of people over the next few days. So again, Patrick, thank you very much indeed. I don't think I will comment on this. I think Patrick made his points very eloquently, and I feel that the best possible tribute I can do to that is to just leave it well alone. Interestingly enough, some Gallup surveys in China and the U.S. reveal that the Chinese are struggling less than Americans to put food on their tables. 6% of Chinese in 2011 say there have been times in the past 12 months when they did not have enough money to buy food that they or their family needed, which is down significantly from 16% in 2008. Over the same period, the percentage of Americans saying that they didn't have money for food in the previous 12 months more than doubled from 9% in 2008 to 19% in 2011. Fewer Americans had access to basic life necessities in September. The nation's basic access index score fell to 81.4 last month, on a par with the 81.5 measured in February and March 2009 amid the recession. Americans' access to basic necessities has never fully recovered after declining amid the 2008 to 2009 financial crisis, and has declined further since February of this year. These findings are based on more than 29,000 interviews conducted each month from January 2008 through September 2011 with American adults as part of the Gallup Healthways Well-Being Index. With the recession officially ended more than 2 years ago, the effects of Americans continue to linger. Unemployment remains high, and more Americans than ever are living in poverty, which may lead to more people struggling to access basic life necessities such as health care, food, and shelter. Although the vast majority of Americans still report that they are not having trouble accessing basic necessities, the trend is currently growing in the wrong direction. Additionally, Gallup's global research finds Americans are now struggling more than Chinese to afford food, which is a reversal from 2008. If the worries about a double recession, a double dip recession, come to fruition, even more Americans may start having problems meeting their basic needs. While economists, analysts, and television pundits argue about the severity of the recession or a double dip in the recovery. It's obvious that Main Street is experiencing depression-like economic symptoms. The key data points, the ones that really matter to the average person on the ground, show that more Americans than ever before are on food stamps. Millions are losing their homes, purchasing power is dropping, and unemployment is out of control. A lack of access to basic life necessities is also rearing its head in the form of rising crime. Cities across the country have reported large-scale garden vegetable thefts, and weekly news reports show that theft of metal, especially copper, is on the rise as people struggle to get by. All of this is coming at a time when leaders in Washington say that the country is experiencing economic growth, albeit sluggishly, and that more spending in the form of stimulus is needed to prevent further degradation. Well, based on recent comments by those holding top positions in the public and private sectors, there is a serious possibility that the economic crisis will revert to something worse than what we have experienced since 2008, something even worse than the Great Depression. Given that Gallup's survey suggests about 60 million Americans don't have money to feed themselves or their families, we can only imagine what the coming food crisis in America will look like amid a significantly deteriorating economic situation. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are at the end of another hour. I hope you've enjoyed the bits which are supposed to be amusing, such as the opening clip, and frankly, I will bring you this information as and when I can. We will be back again at the end of the week with another edition of the Wake Up Call. So until then, I wish you all a wonderful week ahead. Take care of yourselves. Be back on Friday. This is Richard Martin saying bye-bye for now.